This is The Book Group on RNIB Connect Radio. RNIB Talk and Support run telephone social groups for adults with sight loss. There are telebefriending groups which help you socialise by phone for friendship and support, or you can share your passion for books and reading by taking part in a telephone book club. We'll tell you how you can take part in your own telephone social group later on in the show. But for now, let's listen in to our telephone book group on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, I'm Peggy. I'm 80. I'm from Scotland, but now I live in West Wales. I have macular degeneration. I've always loved reading. I love anything and everything. I read all sorts of books and always have.
Hello, I'm David. I'm from Chester and I'm 57 years old. I went blind when I was 6 months old, and I have very badly scarred retinas. As far as reading goes, I do like a lot of horror fiction. I like some crime fiction, and I like a lot of classics.
Hi, I'm called Peter, and I live in Grays, Essex. I'm 91. If you pardon my stammer, by the way, I have a wide taste in books, adventure stories. I've been reading Terry Pratchett recently.
Hello, I'm Supriya. I come from Aldershot and I'm 42. And I have been blind since I was about 2 years old, and I had a condition called retinoblastoma, which is a tumour in the eyes. I like reading classics and any other books, mainly historical fiction, romantic fiction, and I'll try anything once.
This month, the group are discussing J.L. Carr's A Month in the Country. The RNIB talking book version is read by Peter Billingsley.
When the train stopped, I stumbled out, nudging and kicking the kit bag before me. Back down the platform, someone was calling despairingly, "Ox Godby! Ox Godby!" No one offered a hand. So I climbed back into the compartment, stumbling over ankles and feet, to get to the fishing basket on the rack and my folding camp bed under the seat. If this was a fair sample of northerners, then this was enemy country. So I wasn't too careful where I put my boots. I heard one chap draw in his breath, and another grunt. Neither spoke. Then the guard whistled, the train jerked forward a couple of paces, and stopped. This was enough to goad the old man in the near side corner to half lower his window.
"Those getting to get rare and soaked, right down to the skin, master," he said,
and shut the window in my face.
Welcome along to another book group here on RNIB Connect Radio. And we've got the group today. Unfortunately, Ushma and Alan can't join us, but we do have Supriya, Peter, Peggy and David. And we're looking at the book by J.L. Carr, A Month in the Country, today. So, David, maybe starting with you, what did you think about the book?
I actually really enjoyed it. It was one of those books that had what I call atmosphere. It was quite pastoral, and it was one of those books. It was quite a bit like an emotional roller coaster, particularly towards the end. It was read beautifully, I thought, and it was a thoroughly good read. It wasn't very long. I was wondering towards the end how on earth they could have made it longer, but never mind.
It's a very short book, and was this something that you would have read normally? Did you know this book before you came to it?
I had vaguely heard of the book, but I'd never considered reading it. And that's one of the things about these book groups. It does give you an opportunity to read things that you might never have considered reading before.
How about you, Peggy? You obviously have read the book. What did you think about it?
I loved it. I thought it was really nice. What David's saying about it being short wasn't a problem, because I've had so many long books recently from the RNIB. It was quite a relief to have one I could get through quite quickly. But it was beautifully written. Some of the descriptions were very evocative, and the characters were really nicely drawn and you could tell it was from a different age. You know, the fact it was 1920, very different attitudes, especially to the sort of falling in love with the vicar's wife, and they did nothing about it because in those days you behaved yourself. They were married and to other people and just didn't do anything about it. But it was very moving in many parts.
Peter, what about you? What did you feel about it? Was it something that you liked?
It was well written, I thought, and the characters were strong and well drawn, but I wasn't really captivated by it. But it was a good story, a good yarn, as they say.
But not really your kind of thing, was it? Just what did you feel about it? Was it just a bit boring, or?
No. It wasn't boring because it was so well written. But romance isn't my genre, I must admit.
It just didn't quite grip you.
That's right.
And Supriya, what about you? What did you think about the book?
Yes, I liked it. I don't think it was unputdownable, but I was actually pleasantly surprised I liked it. I thought I would never have chosen that book myself. I thought it was going to be one of these strange, short books. But when I started reading it, I really enjoyed it. I actually became very fond of that main character, Birkin. I never expected to. I really liked him. I just wanted him to find somebody and so on. And I like the descriptions of all the sultry afternoons in the countryside. I mean, it's gorgeous and it's nice and sunny like that here today. And it was really evocative of countryside and wildlife and so on, and plants and flowers. That aspect I really liked. I don't know what else to say. I wanted to know, I don't know if somebody can tell me, if they gathered any more information, how at the end, when Alice disappears with her husband and everything, how can a vicar just up sticks and go in such a short time? I'd really like to know. That was a bit vague. I wasn't really sure what happened there. And he just leaves. And also, I would have liked more of a description of the art that he uncovered. It was never actually fully described.
No, it wasn't. I agree with that.
I wanted to know if it's such an important piece of artmanship and he was working on it. I would have liked a full, detailed description of it in the book. So those are the only shortcomings. Otherwise, yes, it was a good short read.
I asked him what he was looking for. He laughed. Well, officially, for the grave of Miss Hebron's forebear, one Piers Hebron, 1373, she'd come across a reference to his excommunication and decided he must have been put outside the yard. I'm to find him, or at any rate look for him. She set aside £50 to fence him in. He hurried through the items as if they didn't interest him. No bones, no cash. Lord, no, I'm not a bounty hunter. The contract says I'm to make reasonable efforts over a reasonable period. The executors agree that 3 or 4 weeks will satisfy them, and not to worry too much if nothing turns up. And do you really expect to find it? Him? I mean, he could be anywhere. And didn't families like the Hebrons have the priests in their pockets? He's probably settled in a prime site under the altar. Moon grinned. Much later, I recalled it was an old-fashioned grin, as they called it in those parts. Well, he said, perhaps you're right, and waved vaguely, taking in not only the meadow, but the entire parish. Well, that's exactly what I told the old boy.
David, you were agreeing there about the description of the artwork, and for people that haven't read the book, it follows a young man, Tom Birkin, who's a World War I veteran, who has been employed by a local village church to uncover a kind of mural, and it's just about his month in the country doing that. Were you the same, Supriya, thinking that actually you'd have liked more description?
Yeah, I would have liked more description about that. It seemed to be, I think it was intriguing because, you know, when that was all starting, I was interested to see exactly what the piece of art was going to be, what it was like, what its provenance was, And it was a bit weak on that regard. I mean, it concentrated more on the characters and the relationship between this Birkin and Mrs. Keach. It's not a large defect, I don't think, but it was a bit of a shame. I'd like to have known a bit more about the artwork.
It was quite descriptive of every so often, he would describe the bit that he was working on, and it was quite intriguing how he worked out at the end why the last corner was not as well done as painted as the rest of it. I didn't expect that. That was quite.
There were little hints of it, but there was never really. I mean, I still don't have a picture of what it looked like, for example.
No, well, somebody falling into hell, I think, was about the only bit that I really got a clear picture of.
Yeah.
So it was a picture, wasn't it, I think, of judgment. So that there's quite a lot of religious imagery in the book. Did you find that as well?
Back in that period, not everyone could read, so pictures and sculpture had a big part to play in the kind of life of the church. Yeah.
Yes, I agree. Yes, because they could depict from pictures to people all the morals and all the preaching that they wanted to do.
We tend to forget now that not everybody then was literate.
That's right. Yes.
Good point, Peter. But some of the descriptions of the other characters too, the family that kept feeding them Sunday food and the outings. And I was intrigued by the way he bumped into somebody. Where did he go, Ripon or something, to look at another cathedral? And he bumped into somebody from the army who told him about Moon's background.
Yeah.
I thought it was a bit stretching reality a bit, maybe, that you bump into somebody who knew both of them.
Yeah.
That's quite often the way of fiction, though, isn't it? We are expected to suspend our disbelief quite often.
But I suppose it was a good way to bring in what had happened, I guess.
And what did you feel about the relationship between Tom Birkin and Moon, who was the other chap who was actually excavating in the churchyard?
Very interesting, because they were both... I mean, they'd both been through the war and both had horrendous experiences, but very different. It was very sad in places because of their experiences.
I think they were just good friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Well, Birkin was the main character and he was the narrator. But yes, I did find that relationship quite moving. They were both brothers in arms and they both had different experiences in the war. And it was just, nice the way they seemed to get on together.
The way their months in the country helped them both to come to terms with their past was very moving too.
So speaking from 100 years in the future, it's quite hard to imagine how people coped with having been through something like the First World War, which is and probably still remains, the worst ever of human conflicts.
Yeah, because... I mean, now that there's the recognised post-traumatic stress and, the problems that people had, but I don't think in those days it was just...
They didn't.
You've been through the shell shock hospitals. Yeah.
Or you had the shell shock hospitals and, there were certain people that were able to be rehabilitated to some extent or another, but that tended to be officers. And a lot of the poorer rank and file people just had to get on with it.
And there were people who had been gassed as well, which was very traumatic. And the effects lasted for generations, really.
Nothing ever really explicit is discussed about their experiences. They acknowledge it, but there's not much chat goes on actually about what the full gamut of their experiences was there. It's just all very unsaid and very under the surface. Did anyone else feel that?
Yeah, I think that is probably how it was in those days, wasn't
I think
it?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
If people didn't, if people were suffering or feeling bad about anything, you didn't say so. You just got on with it.
Yeah.
It's a great thing as far as I'm concerned, at least, that that we're not like that these days, and we are encouraged to, you know, say how we're feeling. But in those days, I think it was just like that.
I think even fairly recently, I have read lots of books or heard people's interviews on radio. They just don't want to talk about it. They suppress it all, and they are horrible to their families, not intentionally, because of this PTSD. They react in all sorts of different ways, and the families are trying to understand what they're going through. They don't necessarily talk about it.
No. I think a lot of them quite deliberately tried to bury it, but then couldn't really because it had made such an effect on them, and they just didn't want to tell people about it and tried to bury it, but probably couldn't. It came out in other ways rather than in words.
Well, the book was only published in 1980, which actually quite shocked me. Did anyone else feel that?
Yeah, I thought I was very surprised.
Yeah.
I kind of thought that was probably written more or less straight after the time it was set.
Yes, it definitely captured the feel of that era, didn't it? Or as far as we can guess,
yes,
the feel of that era was.
Yes.
It didn't come across as a modern novel, which you would have expected from when it was written.
Well, I was born in 26, so I was fairly near that. In that period, and I think that people behaved rather differently then than they do now. That they were more secretive and more subdued.
Did this ring true for you, Peter? Did the book ring true from you in its atmosphere?
Yes, it did. Yes, I thought it was a very close to the mood and the tone of the period, although it was my father's generation rather than mine. 1920, I mean, he was just starting out his working life then.
Yeah, so this was set very much at the time that your parents would have been around the same age as our main character.
That's right,
yeah.
Yes.
Found anything out of the ordinary, Moon? Artifacts? No, gold bits and pieces, I suppose. Moon looked more mournful than ever, but acknowledged the reasonableness of the inquiry by uttering a strangled sound. Mustn't mind my asking. Just showing an interest. Stay as long as you like. And he shambled off. I never exchanged a word with the Colonel. He has no significance at all in what happened during my stay in Oxgodby. As far as I'm concerned, he might just as well have gone round the corner and died. But that goes for most of us, doesn't it? We look blankly at each other. Here I am. Here you are. What are we doing here? What do you suppose it's all about? Let's dream on.
Another clip there of Peter Billingsley reading J.L. Carr's A Month in the Country. And we'll have more from the book group after this.
RNIB. Supporting people with sight loss.
Would you like to chat over the telephone with a group of like-minded people? RNIB's award-winning telephone social groups are small, friendly and lots of fun. A great way of making new friends and a chance to socialise without leaving the comfort of your home. To join, telephone RNIB Talk and Support on 0845 330 3723 or email talkandsupport@rnib.org.uk. RNIB is a membership organisation. To join, visit rnib.org.uk/membership.
What did people feel about the relationship between Burke and our main character and Mrs. Keach, the wife of the Reverend Keach, whose church Burke is working in? Supriya, maybe what did you think about that?
Well, he definitely was attracted to her. but you can't always act on your attractions. But I still didn't get the full idea of how happy she was or wasn't in her marriage. I think she was attracted to him, but I can't really figure that out. I think the novel was maybe a bit too short to go into too many details and look into people's emotional depth, as it were. I think they were definitely attracted to each other. Something might have come of it in another time, another place, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, she seemed to certainly enjoy talking to him and watching him work.
Yeah.
How much of that was a sexual attraction, doesn't come across, but she certainly seemed to enjoy his company, even although they didn't always talk very much.
Well, that was that bit at the end, wasn't there, where he actually almost did turn round and kiss her, and she was sort of hoping that he would, and again, nothing came of it in the end. But Sabria's right; we don't really know much about Mrs. Keach's attitude to her own marriage and what influence that might have had on her attraction or otherwise to Birkin.
Yeah, because the vicar comes, Keach comes across as a very strange old fish, I suppose, and she seemed a warmer person, so it may well have, who knows, but nobody ever knows what goes on inside any marriage, do they?
No.
So, Peggy, did you feel there was a feeling with the Reverend Keach that he just was a little bit of an unpleasant character or a difficult character, and she was maybe stuck a wee bit in an unhappy marriage, or is that putting it too strongly?
It didn't come across quite as real as some of the other characters. He was very, and he did seem to have a sort of a cold, unpleasant streak to him, you know, making Birkin wait for his money and sort of beg for it and everything.
Yeah.
It wasn't even as if it was his money, because it had been left to the church by this elderly lady who was...
We don't know enough about him to make any serious comparisons, but I did think of Mr. Murdstone from David Copperfield, that kind of cold, exacting nature that he seemed to have, but we didn't really know enough about him or his relationship with his wife to know exactly what that situation was.
No, there wasn't really an awful lot about him, was there?
No.
But did you feel sorry for her? Because I always, when I was reading the book, I felt a bit sorry for her being in that marriage with him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
Living in that awful house from the description. I thought, I wouldn't like to live there.
Didn't it say something about her father had died and then she'd got married very quickly? So whether it was the sort of all there was for her was this Keach chap. Whether she had no real alternative to marrying him. But again, it doesn't give you any of that background. That's just a feeling I got.
Lots of things are hinted at, but not fully explained.
Mm. Which is quite good in a way, because it lets you exercise your imagination.
Yeah, perhaps it was a bit short, short book, to explore all the things that he wanted to explore.
That's right,
we left with lots of unanswered questions.
Yeah.
Did that make it a bit frustrating for you, Supriya, as a read, or...?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I wasn't too bothered with the rest of the book. It's only at the end I was a bit frustrated, yes.
It was a good yarn and competently written and well read, but it didn't excite me that much, no.
Well, I thought the kind of treasure hunting mystery side of it, at first I thought that was going to be the most important part of the book, and that was going to be the climax, going to find out what this art was, how it fitted into other artistic, whether it fitted into any kind of artistic period. I thought that was going to be the main focus of it, but it actually turned out not to be the case in the end. And it's again, like Supriya, I feel a bit frustrated. I thought it might have been a bit more signposted.
There was a lot that wasn't really gone into, but I'm not sure that the story was actually strong enough to have been much longer or have had much more detail in it repetitive, if you like.
It was actually made into a movie in 1987. I don't know, has anyone had a look at the movie? No?
No, I didn't know it'd been made into a film.
Is it 4 months in the country then?
Yeah, it's called A Month in the Country. So Colin Firth is the Birkin character, Kenneth Branagh is.
I thought he was a nice sort of character. I quite liked him. So, there you go. They've chosen somebody who can fancy.
Well, I wonder actually how the screenplay would have been written for that. I might actually see if I can find that somewhere.
That might be quite interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder if they've changed anything. You know how movies like to change, a lot of tweaking going on and poetic license going on with their books when they base them on books. I wonder if they changed anything.
And what they changed?
It stays fairly close to the book, I would say. I think that they sum it up a little bit more at the end. It's maybe a little bit more satisfying than the book.
No,
they don't change it that much. They don't change it.
Well, they discovered the artwork was worth millions and made the village. It's interesting, actually, because it very rarely happens. Usually I prefer books to films, but there is the odd occasion where the film actually turns out to be better than the book, in the case of It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah.
That was based on a short story, and I can't remember who wrote it now, but the film did turn out to be, you'd almost imagine that short story was written so that somebody could make a film out of it.
And for Jimmy Stewart, of course.
Yeah.
But I suppose if the film's got Kenneth Branagh and Colin Firth in it, then it's got to be worth watching.
Absolutely.
I think so, yes.
I think it captures the book very, very well, actually. I don't know if it's an audio description, though. That's the only thing I'd say.
I would imagine if it's, set where it is and there is so much relationship between various different people, I would imagine that it should be supported well enough by dialogue. Audio description is useful, but, there are times you can get away without it.
With a husband or wife or somebody, get them to describe the parts that we can't see, and you roughly know what happens anyway, so I don't think that would worry me too much.
Yeah, I think I would quite like to see that. Yes, that was the other thing, the difference in age between the vicar and his wife. That was why I thought she'd maybe sort of fallen into marriage, because her father had died and it was the best of a bad lot, if you like. The best answer to her life. It doesn't say anything about the best of her family, just that, her father had died and she married him a year later. I think it was a year later, wasn't it?
I think a lot of marriages happened like that, didn't they, in the olden days, out of necessity, if not love.
Yeah, sometimes they're sort of, not an arranged marriage as such, but,
more or less.
Somebody suggested this would be a good solution to a problem.
"I'm afraid that you must think us inhospitable," she said. "All of us in our beds and you up there on the floorboards." I said that it suited me very well, and that it's what I'd bargained for. At the end of each day, I was so tired that it didn't need a feather bed to send me to sleep. I saw Moon's head rising above the grass as he heaved himself into the sunshine and began an elaborate dance, waving his arms upwards and sideways. I'd seen him at it before. He hadn't found anything out of the ordinary. He was just working off cramp. "All the same, I shall bring a rug," she said, and left the wall. She walked forward only a few paces, but near enough for me to see that she was much younger than Keach, no more than 19 or 20, and that she was very lovely. More than just pleasant-looking, I mean. She was quite enchanting. Her neck was uncovered to her bosom, and immediately I was reminded of Botticelli, not his Venus, the Primavera. It was partly her wonderfully oval face, and partly the easy way she stood. I'd seen enough paintings to know beauty when I saw it, and in this out-of-the-way place, here it was before me.
And there's quite a bit in the novel, actually, about sort of almost bad marriages, because Birkin himself is actually married, but she has cheated on him. So there's lots of bits about sort of not very good marriages after the First World War.
Yeah, but he's the kind he decides he'll go back to his wife anyway, knowing that she'll probably do the same thing again, which seems very tolerant.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't quite understand that bit, but there you go.
But I think it was just a reflection of the times. I mean, divorce is really fairly recent innovation. I know it did happen before, but it wasn't by any manner of means a common answer. People were married and they just made the best of it.
It was a terrible stigma and scandal if you got divorced in those days.
Mm.
Even when I was growing up as a small child, divorce was almost a dirty word.
It wasn't. Mm. You know, you married somebody and that was it. You were stuck with them, even if they were, if they weren't particularly good to you. Even, and I mean, a lot of women put up with physical abuse because it was their husband, and they were just sort of, well, that was it. Better or worse, and if it got worse, well, tough.
Yeah.
So,
which is sad and seems strange to us nowadays, but, you know, it was a different time, I suppose.
And so can I just ask you all, one at a time, Supriya, would you have read this book normally? Is this one you'd heard of, or was this a new book?
No, I'd never heard of it, and I can't say I would have chosen it, no. Yes, I'm glad I read it, yes.
I'm the same, really. I certainly wouldn't have chosen it from a description of the book as like you have in new books, the kind of description wouldn't have grabbed me, I don't think, no.
It's probably not something I would have chosen if it hadn't, you know, if I'd read through a lot of descriptions, it might not have stood out, but I'm glad to have read it. And it's one of the joys of the book groups is that you read things that you wouldn't normally, things that are out of your comfort zone, if you like, that are different from your normal read. Because I've liked quite a lot of crimes and thrillers and adventures, but I'm glad I read it and I did enjoy it.
I had vaguely heard of the author's name. I think I had heard of the book. It may well have been the fact that I'd heard of the film. But I am glad I read it, and it comes out in credit as far as I'm concerned, but it's not something that I would have read if I'd had, you know, if I hadn't been part of a group. I don't think the synopsis would have grabbed me.
Exactly.
So that is a nice thing about the book group, is it gets you reading maybe the occasional gem that you wouldn't have picked up.
Oh, yes.
Thank you, Yvonne.
All right. Thank you ever so much.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Someone has left the conference. Someone has left the
conference. To join a group, either telebefriending or a telephone book club, please email talkandsupport@rnib.org.uk or call one of the two following numbers: 0845 330 3723 or 0207 391 2218. Thanks to RNIB Talk and Support. You've been listening to The Book Group on RNIB Connect Radio.